You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everybody. We've been talking politics this morning, politics in Alaska and national politics. It does seem like the campaign has been going on for months. But if you want to get a daily fix of the election through November, hey, we're here for you. Download our politics video podcast at thetakeaway.org. There's a link on our homepage, thetakeaway.org. And comment on anything on the program today at 877-8-MY-TAKE. But I want you to consider this storyline, this scenario for a minute, all right? What if for 23 years or so, white cheerleaders were being knocked off in Beverly Hills by a serial killer, and the police, for one reason or another, never told anyone? Now, that's a plot for a Hollywood movie, wouldn't you think? And if that was being pitched around Hollywood, it'd probably be getting a lot of attention. Well, take the cheerleaders out, the white Beverly Hills young ladies out of the story, and substitute young African-American women in L.A., and you've got the real-life story that Los Angeles journalist Christine Pelisek of the L.A. Weekly broke last week, that a serial killer has claimed 11 victims in South Central Los Angeles since 1985, despite a police task force set up last year quietly to investigate the killings. No public knowledge, nor mention to the victims' families and neighbors about a serial killer who has been murdering for 23 years. Joining us to talk about this L.A. shocker is Christine Pelisek. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, good morning.
This is a real amazing story that suggests the strategy of the police, their relationship with the African-American community, and a mysterious character who's been out there for 23 years. Tell us how you broke the story.
I heard about the story, I heard about it in 2006. I was dealing with the coroner's office, and they gave me a list of body dump cases where women had disappeared from 2002 to 2006. And I started looking at this list of 38 women. And after I looked at the list, I found out that some of the women had died from natural causes. Other ones had been killed by Johns or boyfriends. And there were a couple of remaining cases. One of them was a 14-year-old girl. And I ended up talking to the Inglewood detectives and found out from there that that case was related to eight cases from the LAPD. And so from there, I talked to the LAPD and I found out about some of the cases that way.
Is this a case where the social status and race of the victims actually conceals the crime in a sense?
I think a lot of the family members believe that way. When I was talking to them, you know, recently, a lot of them had said that had it been, you know, their daughter had lived in Beverly Hills, everything would have been different, they believe, anyway.
What's been the reaction in the community to this revelation?
Well, they've been really, the community's been extremely upset. I've talked to numerous members of the community, especially one of the families that I talked to. They live just off of Western Avenue because a lot of the killings happen along a stretch of Western Avenue in South Los Angeles. And a lot of the family members, their daughters lived around that area. And so when I told them, they were shocked and they didn't understand why the police hadn't put out any flyers or anything to alert the community. And some of the families, you know, said that they still had younger children that lived in the area. And so they were fearful and they didn't understand why the police hadn't alerted them.
You know, often in a case like this, and I'm thinking of, you know, famous stories about L.A. crime, there is a cop who actually takes on a case like this and personally makes it his own or her own cause. Anything like that going on in this case? And do the police have any leads?
Well, one of the detectives, actually, from the cold case unit, he was the one who put the cases together in 2005. And he was looking back at some of the cases because in 1988, from 1985 to 88, there were eight cases, and all the victims had died. They were shot. And so he ended up in 2005 looking back at those cases and putting the DNA, you know, what they found on the bodies, into the system. And he found all of a sudden he got two cases. A 1980 case popped up, and then a case in 2002 and 2003. So then he realized that, you know, there was a killer that had been killing for that long span. And so he's kept on the case, and they started a task force, so he's kept on with it. So he's been, you know, quite, you know, vigilant about, you know, trying to track this guy down, but it's very hard. The only clue that they have, there was a one surviving victim in 1988, and she described him as an African-American male in his 30s driving a red or orange Pinto. And that's really the only, you know, description they have of him.
And clearly the Pinto is gone, and the man is no longer in his 30s, but he's still out there.
That's right. He took a 13-year break from 1988 and started again in 2002.
So what do you do in a case like this? I mean, can a community vigilance actually break this kind of a case, or does it take sophisticated DNA evidence to try to link these murders to an individual person?
The LAPD is trying to do that. They actually, there's something that's called familial DNA. They've found that the killer, his DNA is not in any kind of felon database, state or federal database, so they've had a problem with that. So what they're hoping is that maybe he might have a relative that's in the prison system. And some experts say that if you're a felon, there's a good chance that you might have a brother, a cousin, or a father who is a felon. So there's a chance that he might have a relative who's in the database. Because he's not in it, there's a chance that he might have a relative who is, and they might be able to find him through that.
Well, journalist Christine Pelisek broke the story in the L.A. Weekly, but the investigation goes on. Thank you very much for discussing the details of a fascinating story from Los Angeles. Thank you, Christine.
You're welcome.
Christine Pelisek on the phone from Los Angeles. And now headlines from Femi Oke.
Good morning to you. It is 28 minutes past the hour.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.